lecture delivered on January 29, 1986 by Firoz Mehta at the K.R. Kama Oriental Institute, Bombay, on Frasho Kereti. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, this is the fourth and the last lecture of my series. You are the world, and the world is you. Put in another form, each person is only a different version of any other person. You may well ask, how can I possibly be the whole world and the world be me? I am only a very tiny fragment of this immense world. And you may also say, how can I be possibly regarded as only a different version of that man living next door to me? I say my prayers at all the five prescribed times every day. I work hard, contribute duly to charity, take good care of my family, live cleanly, and am scrupulously honest in all my business dealings. And I am a teetotaler and a vegetarian. Oh, what a good fellow I am. But my lazy neighbor comes home drunk, neglects his family and is violent towards them, swindles others and uses foul language. So what does our speaker today mean by saying each person is only a different version of any other person? He must be mistaken. It may be so, depending upon the point of view from which you speak. But whilst I appreciate and understand that point of view, I adhere nevertheless to what I said at the start. Added to that, I will affirm something which may sound even more startling. Man and the whole cosmos is embodied transcendence. If you have listened intently and understood clearly various points made in the previous three talks, it would have been seen that in the involutionary and the evolutionary process, by the primordial creative energy, which is a unitary whole, which is transcendence itself, the creative energy functioning in various interacting modes as it journeyed through star-encircled solitudes for countless eons, produced the cosmos and man. In the animal world, which includes the species which we call Homo sapiens, there are very many different species. The very large number of individuals composing each species are true to type, both structurally and in general characteristics. The human species displays the greatest variety where characteristics are concerned, ranging from feeble-mindedness to genius, from sheer devilry to the heights of sainthood. Nevertheless, they are all included within the type which is man. In that sense, it can be truly said that any one person is a different version of any other person. Now, the process of involution entailed the clouding of consciousness till it reached its darkest, its most nascent state in solid matter, the mineral kingdom. After this, the enlightening of consciousness proceeded as the development of increasingly sensitive, refined, and responsive forms of life through the plant and animal kingdoms took place. In man, we see the emergence of self-consciousness, discriminative, analytic, and isolated, and at first strongly self-centered. Most people are still at this stage, which is a necessary step on the way to the realization of individuality, that is, unitary wholeness of healthy and harmoniously functioning psychophysical organisms of single integrated selves. Individuality means indivisibility. As we become wiser, more compassionate, and more truly perceptive, we see step by step that the whole world is indeed a unitary, indivisible whole. At first, the intellect, lit up by a brilliant flash of inspiration, sees this fact. What is seen by intellect changes our life in a small way. But since our inner consciousness is still isolative, we experience conflict between self-centeredness and unself-centeredness, which is ultimately resolved by holistic consciousness. Note carefully, resolved through love and wisdom, not won by overpowering force. Intellectual perception alone does not transform inner consciousness. Sooner or later, the heart, with its deep and gentle feeling nature, comes into play. When head and heart are united in action, there is a transformation of inner consciousness. And this is of the utmost importance. Why? All our thinking and feeling, speaking and doing, of which we are aware with our brain, is the outward expression of the activity of our unknown, invisible inner consciousness. When, through living the virtuous life, the transformation of our inner consciousness reaches its culmination, namely, holistic consciousness, then all our thoughts and feelings, words and deeds, will naturally be perfectly holy, ashore. Furthermore, whereas in our ordinary imperfect stage we can live virtuously only up to a certain degree, by coming safely through our moral and intellectual struggles by great effort, in holistic consciousness, all thoughts, feelings, words, and deeds will naturally and spontaneously, inevitably and invariably express virtue, asa, effortlessly, free of conflict, free of all sorrow. Then you will experience perfect peace of mind and enjoy that transcendental bliss, the ananda, which is the constant state of being of all the perfected holy ones. Such was Zarathustra. Such can be the destiny, the divine good fortune of the Asho Zarathustrian. Now this is Phrasho Kereti for you, the individual. Let us take a little closer look at the significance and implications of being truly individual. Every single person is composed of both masculine and feminine elements in his or her nature. Every male has feminine traits and his anima, that is, his particular image of woman, in addition to his own masculine traits. Every female has masculine traits and her animus, that is, her particular image of man, in addition to her own feminine traits. The cooperative functioning in harmony of the masculine and feminine components in each person, male or female, is the first meaning of the phrase, the marriage made in heaven. That harmony can be brought about by prayer, true contemplative prayer, not a routine mumbling of words, however sincere and heartfelt, or by meditation. Here again, the reality of meditation, samadhi, and not a mere verbal ritual. Or by a ritual which is a real ceremonial magic by a skilled and capable celebrant who is a true magus, a wielder of white magic. Zarathustra was one such magus. Meditate long and deeply on the profound significance and implications of Yasna 33:4 in the Ahunavaiti Gatha. Therefore, O Mazda, I will pray away, exorcise, doubt and ill intent from thy worshippers, perversity of mind from the self-reliant, hostility of the nearest kin from the co-worker, slander from the friend, and the wicked herdsman, the false teacher, from the land, which is the pasture of the cow. Remember that Zarathustra's people came originally from the lands where the shamans flourished when the Stone Age was giving place to the Bronze Age. Whoso then fully realizes psychophysical harmony in his own person is verily a microcosm, a true individual. When that harmony has grown to the full extent possible to a human being, it will include not only all mankind, but also all the kingdoms of nature. And remember that nature is the divine mother of all creation. She is Mrs. God. Neither God nor nature throws anything out of the cosmos. The entire cosmos is enfolded by the everlasting arms and embraced by that love and wisdom and healing power of the infinite eternal. If and when you are blessed with a divine flash of holistic consciousness, you will know this to be true, even if, under very provocative circumstances, you may forget this truth for a while. Unless we remain all-inclusive in this state of cosmic individuality, we cannot heal anyone and everyone of the terrible wounds and sufferings of humanity. There has to be complete acceptance of the one total reality. Then, indeed, your Frashokereti is a permanently established fact throughout your life, and you are the pure basis for the Frashokereti of the whole world. Now let me repeat. You are the world, and the world is you. Whosoever has realized holistic consciousness, like all the perfected holy ones, is a shining focus for the operation of the divine kshatra through him. He is the invisible foundation for releasing the kingdom of God on earth, and indeed of transforming the world into the heavenly state. Whatever one individual has realized can be realized by others. Like a swelling tide, the gathering and ever-growing power of Vahumana and Asha and Armaiti will sweep through the world if each and every one of us will individually live religiously. What are the obstructions put in our way, and by whom, to spoil our efforts to live religiously and to prevent us from flowering into Asho Zarathustrians? And how could we deal with them? I myself am the source of these obstructions, which started from the day I was born. We begin first with greed. The infant wants to suck its mother's milk endlessly. When the mother gets tired or thinks that the infant has had its proper amount, she removes the babe from the breast. Listen then to the howling rage of the child. If greed, or generally any desire, is frustrated, the reaction is one of violence, of hate. Watch two very small children. One stretches its hand, picks up some food, and starts eating it. The other tries to snatch it away and eat it himself. Immediately there is a struggle. One hits the other, who hits back? And a whole orchestra of yells accompanies the tamasha. Thus, the whole complex of greed, hate, and selfishness grows with passage of time. You may say, But you have oversimplified the situation. The infant is ignorant. It reacts instinctively like an animal. And 100 other arguments can be produced. Yes, that is so. But if we are honestly concerned with living the good life, our task is to recognize and acknowledge all the facts about ourselves, face them sensibly and calmly, and intelligently set about healing ourselves. We have already mentioned greed, hate, violence, and ignorance. To these we must add anger, ill will, and malevolence, envy, jealousy, pride, and self-conceit, ambition, lust for power, possessions, status, and pleasure, vanity, and egoism. These troublesome evil qualities have their opposites, which we call good qualities. For every vice, we have its opposite virtue. To mention just a few, charity and generosity, distinctive Parsi virtues, patience, truthfulness, harmlessness, self-restraint, courage, modesty, fidelity, fortitude, steadfastness, compassion, forbearance, forgiveness, purity in thought and feeling, word and deed, and, very important, silence. Now we must remember that virtues cannot be acquired or cultivated in the ordinary worldly way of acquisition and cultivation. Ahura Mazda is embodied in us, is the very essence of us, and the invincible power for good in us. Self-knowledge is so necessary for purification and salvation. Consider how any knowledge is obtained. Think of the scientist's way. He always observes very carefully. He then ponders over what he observes. He questions, criticizes, challenges the ideas and hypotheses which he forms out of his observations, and then stringently tests them by experiments repeated hundreds of times. Similarly, we have to observe ourselves very accurately and calmly. Watch every thought, feeling, word, and action which arises from within ourselves, either as a swift reaction or as a considered response to the endless stream of influences reaching us through our senses from the environment. But observe without attachment on the one hand or aversion on the other, without approval or disapproval. Pass no judgments on what you observe, because all our judgments and condemnations, approvals and disapprovals, are vitiated by our psychological conditioning. The psyche is crammed full with our biases, prejudices, preconceptions, assumptions, beliefs, convictions, etc., most of which have no warrant in truth. We must free ourselves from these ulcers of the psyche. Unlike the medicine given by a doctor for a bodily illness, the cure for a psychical illness is the diagnosis itself by you yourself. Therefore, observe and examine perfectly dispassionately with an open mind, like an ideal Lord Chief Justice on the bench, your whole psychical process. If we do so, the power and knowledge of Asha will stir vigorously inside us. We shall see the truth about ourselves with unerring insight, buddhi, vahumana. And this seeing the truth, this knowledge, which is the real vidya, wisdom which is compassionate, asha conjoined with armaiti, will release the creative healing power of Ahura Mazda himself and transform the unhealthy expression, the ajyaiti, of our psychophysical energy into a perfectly pure and truly beautiful expression, Gaya, of our life energy. Thus, evil is transmuted into good, not by us, but by Ahura Mazda functioning freely through us. Thereby, we enable and allow Ahura Mazda to demonstrate his very own transcendence. And we demonstrate our indispensability to God for the fulfillment of his divine purposes. In this process of healing by the Lord, we shall taste the sweet savor of a holy life and be the faithful, good servants of the Divine Master. And here we come to a point of great importance. I have just said, we shall taste the sweet savor of a holy life. Believe me, this is the truest, pure happiness that any man can ever know. There is no joy in our earthly life comparable to this joy. Unlike any worldly pleasure, it comes to us of its own accord, unsought, untainted by any personal desire. It has the essence of immortality in it. It never dies, for it rests in blissful peace, ananda, pure ananda, in the innermost depths of your whole being, whilst you are occupied in any and every activity of your earthly life. I have never forgotten those magical hours after the midday siesta during my holidays from school, when my mother said to me, "Chal beta, apre behu banwa besye." So we sat side by side on the veranda of our little house in Colombo, facing the Indian Ocean, and prayed the same prayers during the Rafistran or Uzeran gaze. And I remember watching the little wavelets over the ocean waters dancing and shimmering in their ecstasy as they glanced the brilliant light of the tropical sun. And in my innocent child mind, I believed that those flashes of light were the countless hosts of heaven with Ahura Mazda at their head, playing games, like our games when we ran over the green fields. And everyone among those hosts was happy, for no one was the loser in those divine games. Do not dismiss this as childish fantasy. It was truly spiritual experience, a vision of the divine, albeit only a child's vision of the divine. That awakening to the divine and its simple happiness keeps finding its mature counterpart between 50 and 75 years later when writing the books. In the peaceful intensities of the consciousness of reality, of truth, of love and wisdom and beauty, this communion in the divine releases insights attended with unearthly joy. And afterwards, it takes its leave. And yet, nothing of it is lost, for there is a pledge of its everlasting presence, a fragrance of divinity that needs no proving or preserving or possessing exclusively for oneself. For it is of the substance of the infinite eternal. Never attempt to seek this Ananda beyond our earth and all of heaven that man can know. It is the grace of Ahura Mazda that falls upon you like a shower of bliss and suffuses your entire being. The body itself may be transfigured. All you have to do is to stay pure, silent, and mindful. Ahura Mazda does all the rest in holistic consciousness. And you will experience and know the true meaning of immortality. I have said all this about happiness because we, Parsi Zarathustrians, are a pleasure-loving people like many others. But almost the whole human race does not see that the worldly pleasure we madly chase is only an ephemeral joy. It is temporary. It perishes. It often leads to disease of the body through wrong indulgence with food, drink, sex, and drugs and intoxicants. And there is a corresponding degeneration of mind, morals, and character. Therefore, eschew all frantically sought and indulged pleasure and organized pleasure. For planned happiness rarely comes up to our expectations. It all ends in dust and ashes, often in sorrow or in tragedy, as when a drunken driver runs over and kills somebody. True happiness needs no organizing. I am not a dismal Desmond, not a misery-mongering ascetic whose asceticism is of the wrong sort. The word asceticism, derived from the Greek word ascesis, literally means putting aside whatever you see is unnecessary for the good, healthy life. Never forget that all the true spiritual teachers were profoundly concerned with our well-being and happiness. Science has investigated the workings of the pleasure areas in the brain and the need for pleasure in order to be healthy. Read Dr. H.J. Campbell's book, The Pleasure Areas, London, 1973. Those pleasures which we pursue unintelligently or wickedly are evil and destructive. The worthwhile pleasures are free gifts to us. Light and air and all the marvelous beauty of dawns and sunsets and starlit nights, songful birds and singing streams, green fruitful valleys and mighty mountains with glittering snow-clad peaks like great sentinels of the vast Empyrean. All that and more, much more, is the immeasurable bounty and beauty of our mighty, our Mother Earth. Be clean, be pure, be happy, and enjoy it peacefully and gratefully. In fact, it is impossible to prevent this swelling tide of happiness, which is our heritage and birthright, from flooding our whole being. Why do I want you and everyone to be happy with true happiness? Because I know from lifelong experience that the happy man is the good man, and the good man is the happy man. And the only good man is the sensibly religious man. He who is devoid of happiness often turns into a criminal. The good man, filled with inner happiness, is a benediction to his own environment and to all the world. As I am more or less a stranger in your midst, I beg of you to grant me your permission to call upon you to rise up in the strength of your goodness and happiness, in the mighty power of your understanding and vision of what it means to be a true human, which in its highest state means to be a perfected holy one and live such pure Zarathustrian lives that Asha and Vahumana will live restfully in Armaiti and support and fulfill her. In other words, lay the foundations for establishing the kingdom of Ahura Mazda on earth. Consider, please consider very seriously, intelligently, and with utmost compassion, the sad, dangerous, and fearful condition to which man, with his greed and cruelty, his delusions and unbridled passions, has brought the world. Almighty, our Mother Earth, should be paradise, not hell. Man should be her dutiful son, serving, nourishing, and protecting his own divine mother. People all over the world think and work in terms of systems, plans, organizations, techniques, and technology for making a happy human world. They are hopelessly mistaken. All those things are secondary, of minor importance, because the state of the world is the expression of what we ourselves are, of our desires, our character, and our capacities. Because we, that is I myself and you yourself, are greedy, possessive, ambitious, and self-centered, we will inevitably have economic disasters, deprivation, and starvation. Because we ourselves lust for power and wealth, we will always produce the unhappy imbalance and nowadays the violent conflicts between the haves and the have-nots. Because we ourselves are deluded and stupid, we will always misuse knowledge, technical developments, and the immensely powerful energies of nature. Do not say such is human nature and such it will always be. That statement is inaccurate and altogether unwise. It takes no account of the fact that even very wild animals can be tamed. I say that such is our state because we are still subhuman, not fully human yet. Many people are still beasts and predators and cruelly exploitive. We are the dupes of Ahriman. But we must not be depressed. Ahura Mazda dwells eternally in us, even as the spirit of Zarathustra animates us. Each and every one of us can evoke the divine powers of Ahura Mazda as revealed to Zarathustra in the Ahura Mazda Yasht, paragraph 13. Supreme righteousness, wisdom, beneficence, universal friendship, invincibility, healing and lordship of life. Worship me, O Zarathustra, says Ahura Mazda, by day and night, and I, Ahura Mazda, will come to thee, bringing help and joy, and to thee will also come Sraosha, the good and holy, bringing help and joy. And I would add to that, even if the night be shrouded in deepest darkness, evoke the divine power of Ahura Mazda, who assuredly lives in each and every one of us. Such evocation will make you like Bahram Izzad Pirozhgar Dushman Jadar, and you will triumph over all evil and sorrow, not by war against evil, but by that healing power of transcendent wisdom and love, which is the one and only way of peaceful and joyous triumph by Ahura Mazda. If you fail to fulfill your true destiny, some future historian will write, those degenerating and decaying Parsis of the 35th century after Zarathustra lost their spirit and were reduced to dust and ashes. But I do not believe that you will fail. You are the inheritors of the heroic spirit of ancient Iran, of Zarathustrian Iran. You are the descendants of Minocher and Faridun, of Sam, Nariman, Zal and Rustam, and of spiritual heroes like Vishtaspa and Asfandiar and Zarathustra himself. Moreover, Soshyant of the seed of Zarathustra lives in you, calling to you to awake and rise up and fulfill your divine destiny. Zarathustra was the first great pioneer in that distant past when the Stone Age was giving place to the Bronze Age. It is most fitting for you, fellow Zarathustrians, to be the pioneers ushering in the change from our sick and perishing plastic age to a zestful, vigorous and mature human age. Therefore, rise to the occasion by faithfully living the Zarathustrian life night and day, and be the children of a new dawn, pioneers of a new world order of truth and goodness, of wisdom and love and beauty. And that is the meaning and the real substance of Frasho Kareti.